It's 40 years since one of the darkest days of the Troubles. Death on a massive scale in both County Down and County Sligo. We remember those who died at Narrowwater and Mullaghmore. A £1 billion fund to boost English high streets. Will we get some of that money to inject life back into our local town centres? Also on the programme this morning, we meet a courageous young father with an interesting bucket list. And would you use your neighbour's bin? There's a question for you. It's already come up this morning, so we're going to deal with that. We've had an inquiry. We'll bring you more information on that a little later in the programme. Whatever is on your mind this morning, feel free to let us know. 028 90 333 105. It is 40 years since Mullaghmore, 40 years since Narrowwater. It is very, very hard to believe. I want to speak to a man who actually was so busy as a journalist at the time, he managed to cover both stories on the same day. And indeed, Eamon Malley is with us. Eamon, just remind us of what happened that day.
Well, of course, in those days, Frank, the generation of today, the young people of the day wouldn't realise, we didn't have mobile phones in those days. So you were totally dependent on the goodwill of everybody around you, wherever you went, when there was an incident, to get access to a telephone. But we got word somewhere or other in the newsroom in Downtown Radio that there had been a terrible tragedy in Mullaghmore. Now, I guess a lot of people wouldn't have a clue where Mullaghmore was, but I was sort of a hitman at the time, and I immediately jumped in the car, raced across the country to Mullaghmore, in the beautiful setting of Mullaghmore, and of course the real horror was evolving and emerging at that point in time, that on a beautiful sunny morning on this day 47 years ago, Earl McBatten, who actually used to rent a classy barn. It was a beautiful building on an elevated hill above Mullaghmore. It was owned by Hugh Tunney, the meat baron. And many years later, I spoke with Hugh Tunney as he emerged from the driveway up to classy barn. Because he was a very, very old man at that stage. But essentially, Shadow 5, which was Mountbatten's boat, did what it did regularly. It pulled out from the harbour there, out into the glistening sea, and it had aboard his family. And, of course, when it got well out in the water, the bombers had located themselves high above at an elevated point on the shoreline, overlooking the stretch of water, and they triggered the bomb. And Earl Mountbatten and Nicholas Natchball and Paul Maxwell and Lady Brayburn were killed. It was in IRA terms, what they called an execution. Now, Frank, I should bring attention to the fact that many, many years later, we had the occasion to be in Romsey, and that was Earl Mountbatten's hometown. And in the cathedral there, there's a plaque in front of the pew in which he and his family sat each Sunday, very close to the church altar, and on it it says executed in Ireland. And many of the visitors from Ireland accompanying us on that particular occasion were very upset at the term executed in Ireland. Now, I didn't dispute the term executed or assassinated or anything, but it was just an interesting perspective that people from Dublin and Belfast were offended at the term executed. The IRA said assassinated, and that term was very, very deliberately chosen, assassinated.
Your description there is crystal clear, Eamon, and I have to say I haven't paid much attention to how the bomb was detonated in Mullaghmore with all of the coverage over the last 40 years. I'm very aware of who did it and how the people served time for it and how they eventually were released in relation to the Good Friday Agreement, but I wasn't aware that they would have been able to see the fact that children were on board the boat.
Well, it would be impossible not to see. And it's a very interesting thing. I remember after the Brighton bombing, discussing with an IRA person, what informed that? What why was that decided, that Margaret Thatcher should be targeted at that time? And do you know what that guy said to me? We suddenly realised she was available. Now, similarly, everybody in that area would have known the habitual behaviour of Mountbatten and his family. Going down to that the harbour, they were part of the landscape there, Mountbatten and his family. And people knew them. People were on first-name terms. People gave a service to Plathy Bon, the residence in which they stayed. So they were part of the landscape. And I should point out, Frank, that in 1979, obviously it was later in 1979, I visited the Mays prison, and the individual with whom I spoke when I visited the prison, the IRA man with whom I spoke with that, was Bobby Sands. And he only spoke Irish to me. I didn't even know before going in there with whom I would get an opportunity to speak. But the man I met was a man who introduced himself as Rupert O'Shaughnessy. And it turned out to be Bobby Sands, who later died in hunger strike. And I challenged him very robustly about the morality of killing an old man and his family in a boat in the west of Ireland. He was unrelenting, unforgiving. He accused Mountbatten of knowing precisely what the problem was in Ireland for generations and for decades. But he said he took advantage and recreated in Ireland, but made no contribution to a resolution of the problem. So there was a very, very hostile attitude towards Mountbatten, certainly outside of Mullaghmoor, and very little sense of loss when he and his family were targeted.
On the same day, the IRA would target members of the parachute regiment while they were travelling through Warren Point at Narrow Water. Two attacks within a very short space of time at the same location. Sheer luck that no civilians were killed. People would have been using that busy stretch of road between, very close to Warren Point Golf Club, between Newry and Warren Point. But in the end, no civilians caught up in it at all. But incredible carnage.
That's not true.
This is not in the
immediate bombing.
Correct, but the IRA didn't kill any civilians. The army, in the end, killed a civilian.
That's right. There were two brothers called Hudsons, and they were running an amusements park on the day at O'Meave. And when they heard the explosions, out of curiosity, they travelled northwards from O'Meave across the other side of the water in the Republic of Ireland, and took up positions in local parlance. Frank, you would understand this the way we talk down there. They were gawking. They were gawking across the stretch of water to see what had happened. And the army opened fire across the water because the army presumed that the bombs had been triggered from across the water in the Republic of Ireland. And one of those people was shot dead, and his cousin, he was injured. But so they were just very, very unfortunate. But you're absolutely right. That stretch there at Narrow Water, you and I know it extremely well, Frank. I'm South Armagh, you're South Down. And there's a constant stream, of course, today of cars. It is miraculous that no civilians in cars or vans were not caught in the double explosion. And just let me paint the picture of Narrow Water. The convoy, there was a Land Rover and a convoy of two four-ton lorries carrying soldiers of the Tupara Regiment, moving from Ballykilner to Newry at about 20 to 5 roughly. And as the convoy passed Narrow Water Castle on the water side heading north, there was a lorry packed with bales, and in the bales, the IRA concealed an 800-pound bomb, fertilizer bomb. And as the convoy passed, the bomb in the lorry of bales, the loaded bales, a flatbedded lorry, exploded. And in that attack, six soldiers were killed. Now, by then, a gazelle landed carrying Colonel David Blair on the opposite side of the road, close to the entrance to Narrowwater Castle. And Colonel Blair set about taking control of the entire scene. Now, then the IRA had another bomb planted at the mouth of Narrowwater Castle in the entrance. That bomb went off, killed Colonel Blair and 12 more soldiers. Colonel Blair was the highest ranking officer, army officer, killed during the Troubles in Northern Ireland. So it was an extraordinary lot of luck by the IRA to have the bales, the bomb in the bales on one side of the road, have a bomb in the gateway on the other side of the road, having foreseen and anticipated how the army would react to arrive on the opposite side of the road to take charge of the scene, and hence the double ambush.
I remember the day very well because I was in Warren Point myself, and I was going out with my father to deliver carpet out towards Ross Trevor, and we were driving out of the town when the army were driving in, and I remember seeing the large lorries and the soldiers in the back of the lorry, and by the time we got out towards Ross Trevor, we heard the explosion. We did what we had to do in Ross Trevor, came back towards Warren Point, and Sergeant McGuire, who was the local sergeant in the barracks, he was directing traffic through Bourne because you literally couldn't get down towards the golf club at that point. And I spoke to a fire officer called Billy McKinley, who has since passed away, and Billy painted pictures of absolute horror as to what he saw when he was called to that scene, and literally, and it's very sad to say this, and I apologise to anyone who's listening for this graphic detail, but literally body parts were being found many days later in the vicinity of that atrocity.
Well, Frank, Colonel Mike Jackson, synonymous with Bloody Sunday, I got to know Jackson. And Jackson was the number two senior man after the first, the Colonel Blair and his unit had been killed. Colonel Mike Jackson went to the scene. And this is what he said. He spoke of human remains scattered over the road, in the water, and hanging from the trees. Such was the scale of extraordinary death and destruction at that scene. And when I arrived there later in the evening, it was a beautiful evening. It was like, it certainly was like a scene from a war film around that area, an area of green beauty. And at the time, there developed an obscene row between the army and the police, and involved Mrs. Thatcher got centrally involved, and the army wanted to assume absolute control for security, and Mrs. Thatcher took a stance against the army, much to the chagrin of the army, and she gave the upper hand to the RUC at the time, and added 1,000 police officers to the police force at that point in time, and she also appointed a coordinator of security, Sir Maurice Oldfield, to take charge of overall security in Northern Ireland to make sure that security was handled properly. But a huge wedge opened up between the army and the police at that point in time.
The bomber was a man called Brendan Burns, who later would kill 5 soldiers in Camlla. And I think about,
I want to be careful about that, Frank.
I've had this confirmed from speaking to people very close to Brendan Burns, that he was the bomber in Warren Point, and that he was the bomber in Camlla when 5 soldiers were killed a few years later. Why do you believe Brendan Burns wasn't the bomber, Eamon?
Oh, no, I didn't say that at all. But it was, this is the sequence, Frank, as I understand it. There were 2 people arrested. One of them was Brendan Burns. Allegedly, I didn't witness this, so I mean, I'm basing this on oral and historical accounts. There were two men arrested on a motorcycle on the other side of the water in the Republic of Ireland. One of those was Brendan Burns. Now, both of them were held for a time and both released because they clearly didn't get anything on them. Now, one of those people was named as Brendan Burns, and he later died when a bomb went off prematurely in 1988 in South Armagh. But no, that's as much as I know at this point in time. But he was definitely accused of being one of the people on the other side of the water deemed to have been responsible for involvement in the bombing.
Yes, he did die at his own hand about 8 years later. And one of the memorable news items after that was his funeral. He is recognised in South Armagh by Republicans as one of the heroes of the cause. His funeral in South Armagh turned out to be a very violent affair, with the RUC attacking the mourners, and Saracens escorted the funeral cortege to the church in Crossmaglen. Was there an element that day of almost getting revenge on Brendan Burns?
Well, it's an interesting observation and recollection, Frank, because I tell you what, Narrow Water was deemed by the IRA at the time as their revenge for Bloody Sunday. So that particular killing ran so deeply. And later on, James Glover, the commander of UK land forces, said Narrow Water was arguably, his words, the most successful and certainly one of the best planned IRA attacks of the whole campaign. Now, you can imagine how much that hurt and offended an army officer at that level to have to say, because it was immense. They lost their number one, the most senior officer ever in Northern Ireland in that bombing, and they lost 18 soldiers. Like, it was 17 other soldiers. It really was. And again, it was like, how one has to wonder how. From where did the IRA get the information that those convoys or that convoy would be motioning from Ballykillner to Newry on that particular day? That has remained a mystery to me. No one has ever given me any indication of how the IRA knew that such an eventuality was going to unfurl. And could you imagine the manpower involved, Frank? With planting those bombs, getting everything into position, and managing to do that without intelligence being picked up, without somebody spotting what was going on, because there would be possibly dozens of people involved in that operation, planning it and executing it. Those operations were huge operations. I remember there was a bomb above Newry, killed one of the last soldiers in Northern Ireland on the railway, and I was told there were up to 3,000 people getting the bomb on a reconfigured lorry to move down the railway line to hit the army lookout tower. Not the tower, but the checkpoint above Clog. And I was told that there were up to 3,000 people involved in that one incident. Could you imagine the number of people involved in this bombing, this double bombing here, this ambush? And yet, the intelligence was there to engage in this. It was remarkable.
I must say, you ask a very interesting question about how did they know Eamon? Because I spent a lot of time in Warren Point as a teenager, working on and off in my father's shop, and I only once saw that amount of heavy-duty army truck come through the town. The jeeps were always around, of course, but to have those large vehicles come through the town was a rare enough sight. To see them that day, for them to be attacked that day, and for the people to die that day, many questions will probably remain unanswered.
You see, the history of Northern Ireland hasn't been written at all, Frank. People have snatches of information, but all the missing parts of the jigsaw is quite remarkable, you know. And in many cases, the people with the answers are now dead. So we won't ever really find out. The army really, really drove a very, very tough bargain with Mrs. Thatcher at the time. General Creasy at the time wanted internment brought back to Northern Ireland. But interestingly, she resisted that. She opted for bringing in Sir Maurice Oldfield as the security coordinator and boosting the number of police officers at the point in time. So the police won out at that moment in time against the army, although the army took the big hit on the day. And I remember going to Musgrave Park Hospital when Mrs. Thatcher went there the following day or the next day with 48 hours to visit some of the injured, you know. And Derek Henderson, my colleague, I think accompanied her, and I remember she expressed a horror naturally about the whole event. But those were unbelievable times, Frank. In the one day, Irma Batten. And when I reflect on the generosity of the Queen in her visit to Dublin Castle, when in the presence of the Irish President, Mary McAleese, and the generosity of her remarks about the wrongs and the hurt that collectively, as countries, we visited upon each other, and the generosity of her presence and her utterance, speaking in the Irish language when she addressed the President of Hochtoran, August Cardinal Heron, her generosity to use the Irish language, accepting the Irish nation, and then visiting the Garden of Remembrance, visiting Croke Park, the scene of where her soldiers had killed young men back in the 20s. And then Prince Charles going to Mullaghmore, almost closing the page on that history. It's fascinating, all of those events, the sequels to Mountbatten killing and to the Narrow Water. Of course, we didn't give very much attention, Frank, and I want to correct this, to the little boy from County Fermanagh, Paul Maxwell, the 15-year-old boy who was helping on the boat that particular day. Innocent little fellow. It could be your son, it could be my son, it could be anybody's son. I'm sure would find it very, very exciting to be on the boat with all those visitors on that day. And that poor family have been suffering ever since.
Eamon, I really do appreciate your description of those horrific events 40 years ago today. Eamon Malley, who was at both scenes, and there's some distance between Sligo and Warren Point, but that's journalism with a capital J. Eamon, thank you very, very much indeed. If